Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we engage in a discussion of the most important era in the history of mankind.
Is it the Enlightenment or the Renaissance?
Mm-mm.
The Industrial Revolution?
No, Jim. The record store era.
So here's the deal. This is day two of Ryan Week. You don't even have to put the reverb on.
Beautiful.
You can just do it.
Beautiful.
Our friend Ryan Scholin is here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we've been wanting to have Ryan on for a long time.
Yes, we have.
And he has, like, young kids, and he can never make it, and he's got all these family obligations, whereas our kids are older, and they don't care about us. And,
yeah.
That's right. So it's no big deal for us, but for him it's a big deal that we got him away for this recording. Right?
I'm more than happy to be here to rock the suburbs.
Yes, we appreciate it.
You do that on a regular basis, right?
That's what I do. I drive around with the windows down on the family Prius, blasting, you know, Kanye and Kendrick and whatever else.
It's beautiful.
But yeah, while I'm going to pick up my CSA veggies, yeah.
Yes. All right. So what we're going to talk about on this one, I thought this was really fun because both of you guys have experience working in record stores.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I never did that. I worked in a video arcade. That was my favorite job that I ever had when I was young. Yeah.
Pretty good.
That was great. But you guys got to work in record stores.
Yeah.
And Patrick, you've talked about Tales from the Record Store before.
I have told some stories.
We want to hear some stories from Ryan, too. Yeah. So what do you remember about your time working in the record store? Where was it? What was the store? What years are we talking about here?
Sure. So we're talking like early...
I'm going to get a beer.
Early mid-90s. Like as soon as I turned 16, could drive... No, I guess it was that I quit on my mom first. Working for the family business, I kind of hit a point where I was like, Mom, I am never doing this again. And she's like, great, get a job.
Yeah, that's your choice.
And you know, where you could go in the neighborhood to get a job, you'd drive like 5 minutes, was the local Peaches record store.
Ah, okay.
Right?
Peaches.
Peaches, a chain in the South. If you're, you know, if you live between like...
We had them too.
Where'd you...
That was my favorite in Ohio.
Ohio?
We had Peaches Records and Tapes. And it was a big store. It was in a really big unit box.
Yeah.
And you got the little Peaches crates.
Everybody loves the crates
for the the albums, or they had 45 crates. I still have one.
I can smell the wood of those crates if I think about it. I went online looking for Peaches today, and I found people nostalgic for the old stores, but also I found somebody selling like 12-inch like LP record crates with the Peaches logo on them for like $75 or something.
Wow.
And if you're into that, go for it. But like, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of nostalgia.
They also had, I don't know if yours did, but these really big album cover like portraits, like canvas or
the
something.
Huge
like portraits
squares
up
on
the wall
in front of the store.
Oh, ours were inside.
Both.
And the only one I remember, they had a few of them up, but the one I remember was Dream Police.
Oh, nice.
The Dream Police album cover. Just
iconic.
Like huge up on the wall.
Yeah.
I have blocked out exactly what they were.
Okay.
I don't remember. But that was the first. I worked a year at this place, and then they started shutting down Peaches in Florida. And so that the store closed. But before then, the amazing thing, you know, working at the local record store and perhaps working at the less efficient chain that would, you know, close down, is that the people who were there, it was literally like an episode of The Real World. Like there was the, right? There's the alternative couple, and there's the Rastafarian guy, and there's the heavy metal dude.
Yeah.
And there's the like, you know, the long-haired blonde rocker who was in the local band that had a hit, but he didn't join the band until after they recorded it. that guy was there. It was amazing. Just an amazing group of people and a lot of... Oh, and I can't forget the morose guy. The morose guy had the best taste in music.
Now, did they ask you any music-related questions during the interview? Do you remember?
Oh, God, no. I don't think so. It's just, are you, you're a teenager. Are you competent? Can you handle money? Can we trust you?
Yeah. Can you lift 40 pounds?
Yeah. You had to do a lot of, what was it called? You'd pull records to send back to the distributor.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd go around with your checklist. This was not the most exciting part of the job. I much more enjoyed rewraps.
Yeah.
Right? Where you got to play with the shrink wrap and the hair dryer.
That's right.
It
was returned, but it was still able to be sold again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
you know, that in the promos, right? The sort of like sharks attacking the promos when they were old enough to go home with people.
Yeah.
But the promo game was fun because at Peaches, we were, I mean, the corporation, I don't know if it's still around, so I can say what I want, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was pretty chill, including management. And so, you know, you could play almost whatever you wanted in the store. So we were playing Uncle Tupelo, and we were playing like the Sweet Relief Tribute, and we were playing, you know, Lemonheads, and just music that you, I don't think you would normally hear in a commercial sort of chain record store.
Yeah.
And as they started kind of cracking down and being like, well, if it wasn't open already, we would just be like, oh, whoops, the plastic is open. I guess we'll have to play this early Smashing Pumpkins record that's kind of rare, and we special ordered on purpose so we could listen to it. You know, so we'll check it out.
So you mentioned the Sweet Relief, right? Was that?
Yeah.
What was the deal with that?
I would have never heard this record. It's a Victoria Williams tribute record, right? Yeah. Lucinda Williams' sister, amazing songwriter. Right.
They were raising money for her because she had MS.
I believe that's correct.
I'll look it up while you guys talk.
I believe that's correct.
And so you've got like you've got you know, things that I was into then, like Pearl Jam and Matthew Sweet, that would certainly get my attention. You had Evan Dando from the Lemonheads on there.
Yep.
You had a lot of amazing singers and songwriters. You had the Jayhawks, who I hadn't really been exposed to yet, and they played an amazing song on that record. They played a song called Lights on that record that I still, to this day, if I fly home from somewhere, and home has been a million different places, but I still like, you know, flying home, seeing the lights of your city at night, it still comes back to me.
What kind of song would you give if you had the song to give? What kind of life would you live if you had a life to live? Would you want to make something good that you can look on, give you lots of pleasure? Yeah, you would. What about this thing that you gave? What if it weren't quite perfect?
There was something bad about it.
Would you love it just the same? Would you still care about it? The lights on the city so good, almost like somebody thought they would.
All right, that's great. So you got to play stuff like that.
We got to play whatever we wanted.
That's amazing because I don't think that was the case for you.
No,
Patrick,
that was not the
right?
case. So I worked at Musicland, which was owned by Sam Goody, and then later out of Sam Goody. But we had a very strict policy that you were only supposed to play the stuff that was on that week's flyer. Right?
That's right.
It was on the main sale wall.
That's right.
And after a while of working there, I actually started working there in high school. And the reason I worked there is because I had a good friend who worked there. And there was a guy that was working there during Christmas who like threw his back out picking something up, so he couldn't work. And they asked me to come in and like fill in for like a couple weeks while he got better. And I never left. I got the job and I was like an employee for like 4 years after that. But we got a little more comfortable and, you know, did some of the same things. And some of the older guys that worked there was like, oh, man, these are the records you got to check out. Like, you know, this and this. And then we started what you start doing, I think, is you start going back, or at least I did in history, and you start learning about things. And one of the things that I really got obsessed with was like, wow, this guy Bob Dylan, every single Bob Dylan record is here. It looks like there's 30 of them or something. And one day we had put on Highway 61 Revisited, which, you know, in 1985, that record was 20 years old, you know, and definitely wasn't on the sale flyer. And
they weren't pushing a 20-year-old album.
They weren't really pushing. I don't even think we had another copy, which is a big no-no. Like, you couldn't have... You know, right? If somebody came up and said, what's this? I really want to buy it. You had to at least have one in the racks.
The Bob Dylan records from that period were all in like the sale rack in my day. There was like a 888, whatever it was.
Yeah. The right price.
Yeah, the right price. Like the cardboard thing. They were always around.
Exactly. And I remember there was a guy there kind of hanging around as we finished side one, and nobody had ever seen. It was a pretty small store in a pretty small mall. And then we turned the record over and started playing side two. And he walks up to the counter where I'm standing by myself and says, "Wow, man, I haven't heard this record in a record store in like 15 years. What is it?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Highway 61 by Dylan." And he looks at me, suddenly tone, complexion changes absolutely, completely. "Take it off." Like, what? He goes, "I'm Mark Johnson, regional sales manager for Sam Goody. I'm here." Like, I was like, "Oh,
you got busted."
Yeah, busted.
You totally got busted.
So, pulled off the side and flipped on, you know, like the Eurythmics or something. Right after
that. Not there's anything wrong with the Eurythmics.
Right. Not at all, but it was on the sale flyer out there.
When your mother sends back all your invitations, and your father to your sister, he explains that you're tired of yourself and all of your creations. Won't you come see me, Queen Jane? Won't you come see me, Queen Jane? Now in all of the flowers.
Okay, so that was not the Eurythmics.
No, that was not the Eurythmics, and that's what happened. Although I will say this about Sam Goody really quickly, and I'd like to get Ryan's thoughts. The big day at Sam Goody was the last day before Christmas. It was either Christmas Eve or the day before, depending on where it fell. They gave the employees 50% off anything in the store.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was 75% off blank tape at the time. For me, that was a huge deal. In like 1986, man, I was buying the packs of Maxells, my whole paycheck would have been spent buying records. And that was a great day.
Was your whole paycheck not normally spent
Most
buying records?
Most of it
records?
Was, yeah. I think the normal discount was 20% or something, I think, for the employee discount.
We might have got 30 or something, there was always that moment where it's like extra employee discount, and I'm buying like CD racks and shelving units.
That's right. Yeah, right. You got to borrow a station wagon just to take that stuff home that day. That was always a big perk of working in a record store, was the employee discount.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All I got at the video arcade was be able to get some free plays once in a while.
That's right.
Once in a while.
Some tokens.
Well, you kind of figured out, because you have the key, the master key that opens up all the games, you kind of figured out, like, because here's what would happen. Kids would say, like, "Hey, it ate my quarter." And then you got to open it up and you have the little button you can push to set a credit on the game, right? And I kind of figured, well, what if kids are lying to me? It didn't really eat their quarter and I just gave them a free credit. So the people sort of checking on this who have to reconcile this at some point are probably going to allow for a certain number, right?
Churn.
So when you have the master key, you figure, if I just do maybe a couple on that game and a couple on another game, nobody's going to really notice.
Right? Spread it around.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So when the store would close, when the arcade would close, and I was the only one there because this was a one-man operation. Yeah. It was in a mall.
Oh.
And so when it would close and I'd be the only one in there, just hit up a few different little games. And
it's the equivalent of shrinkage.
Right? That's right. Okay. Here's a little surprise for you guys. We actually got a call on our suburban party line that has to do with Tales from a Record Store.
Fantastic.
We did not set this up at all. This just happened. All right. So you ready for this?
Yes.
Hey, Rockin' the Suburb, dude. Jimmy Linetti taking you up on your offer or dare to have folks call in. So I had one little thought in mind I was going to share. I know a few weeks ago the topic of how to properly handle vinyl albums came up, about how to get them out of the sleeve and get them to the turntable. Well, part of that I want to address is how to get the shrink wrap off a brand new album. So when I first got out of college, kind of aimless, so of course I ended up working at a record store. And so that was around 1986, and that was kind of the transition between vinyl and CDs. You know, we were converting all the vinyl bins, you know, putting a divider down the middle of them so that you could have two long boxes right next to each other. Yeah, you remember long boxes? They're pretty cool. I think I used to save them all, but I kind of regret throwing them away because now I see they're going for big money on eBay for some reason. Well, anyways, vinyl was still kind of popular then, and one of the old timers at the record store taught me this trick of how to open up a brand new record to get that shrink wrap off without picking it with your fingernail or whatever. But what you do, take the vinyl in the sleeve with the cellophane on it, and hold the end that's open. And if you're wearing a pair of jeans, you need to be wearing a pair of jeans or some sort of denim or khaki or whatever. But just take that edge where the opening is and rub it back and forth on your leg real briskly about a half dozen times or so. And the friction, the heat that you generate, just opens that thing up as perfect as you could want. So it's a great little trick. Amaze your friends, you know, show them that you still know how to handle vinyl. Anyways, guys, still enjoy the show. I'll keep listening if you keep making them. Thanks. Jimmy Linetti.
There he is.
So what do you think?
I still open records that way to this day. I got taught the same lesson.
Wow.
Yeah, a guy named Jeff Burnett. I'll never forget it. He told me how to do that. Propped his leg up on the counter and just started whipping that thing. And the next thing you know, it's got a perfect little
crack. Do you know this trick?
Crack.
No, I'm there like fiddling with a key or something.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
It's all going everywhere.
I've never known. I'm 50 years old. I've never known this trick. How is this possible? When I was a kid, I used to have, it's long gone. I wish I still had it. I used to have a little thing that was made specifically for taking the shrink wrap off. It actually was, it was about, how big? About maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches in diameter. And it actually looked like a little record.
Yeah.
And I think it had the Boogie Records logo on it. I think that's where I got it, in Toledo. But then it had like a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a little trench sort of in the one end of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then
and you sort of laid it on
that. And then
the,
within that was like a little piece that stuck out.
Yeah.
So you could just run it down the album, the shrink wrap, and it would just
it would
sort
pop
of
it
come
open.
Right off. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't have that anymore, and so now I struggle with
go
the
back to your
fingernails
jeans
or whatever. But now, now that I know this, where's this been my whole life?
Beautiful, man.
I don't know this trick. I still, you know, with my record collection, I'm still looking at it, and it sits there on a shelf in the living room, and it's got a bunch of plastic, and I'm like, can I take the, you know, if it was like an impulse reissue I bought in 2000, I can probably take the plastic off it, right? Like,
sure.
You know, how much does it have to cost before I'm like, I'm going to leave that in plastic forever?
All right, so this has been really fun.
Yeah, it's been great.
Tales from the Record Store. Mm-hmm. I know that people always love it when you talk about these things. Yeah. Record stores have made a bit of a comeback lately.
They sure
right?
have,
so
yeah.
New record stores are opening. Like all the like, there's a new one that just opened
right down
in Herndon.
The street. Yeah.
Here.
Are they hiring? Maybe we can get weekend funny. Jobs there, me and you, and just work there on the weekend.
The one in Leesburg up here moved from a really small space into a bigger space, so that's good. That's encouraging. And then there's one that just opened up in Herndon. For people who have no idea of Northern Virginia geography, this means nothing to you,
no,
but it's exciting for us.
Nothing at all. It's very exciting. We can drive there close.
When, next time it's Record Store Day, I'm there.
Yes,
all
right. Absolutely. Exactly.
Every day is Record Store Day.
Yeah,
that's right.
All right, so let's just finish up here, and then Ryan's going to play us out again. You are listening to Rock in the Suburbs. It is a podcast that you can find on Apple Podcasts or Audioboom or Stitcher or TuneIn. You can also visit our handcrafted website, suburbspod.com.
Right.
There's cool stuff there. You can also email us, rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on social media at Suburbs Pod. Or do you guys want to hear it again?
Yeah, we should hear it again.
You can call.
You should call.
Our suburban party line. And in case you wonder, you know, you kind of forget what that's all about, this will remind you.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the suburban party line.
There you go. 612-440-1984. That probably should be in the song, but we didn't think of it.
It'll be on the B-side or the 12-inch disco mix. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Then was there anything else? I think that
I think
sums
that covers
up all of
that.
Yeah,
you can find us.
So Ryan, play us out here.
So we had, you know, the 12-inch disco mix in the bin still there at Peaches, but we also had the Morose guy, and the Morose guy was my favorite. He played music that he would definitely insist, like, no, you have to listen to this.
Yeah.
To the point where one day I think he was trying to get me into like Richard and Linda Thompson. I'm like, wow, that's pretty obscure, dude, but okay. And he one day shows up with a tape. He's like, okay, look, take this tape, put it in the car when you go and listen to it. I'm like, okay. And it's got Pour Down Like Silver on one side and another Richard and Linda Thompson. I think I want to see the bright lights tonight. Oh, nice. On the other side. And it blows me away. It's amazing. It's like nothing I've ever heard. And so on Pour Down Like Silver, there's a song, Night Comes In. And it, of course, like, you know, when you're 16, 17 years old, you can hear a song a couple of times and it's immediately meaningful.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my goodness, this is about me and my long distance girlfriend or all of this other stuff I'm going through. Because you're a teenager, you're going through a lot, and music really means something. So that song, you know, again, like today I can hear it. I can tell you, you know, which bedroom it takes me back to and what I was thinking about. Nice. That's how strong a memory that is.
All right. God bless the morose guy.
Thanks very much for listening to Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Ryan Shulman.
And this is Night Comes In. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Night comes in like some cool river. How can there be another day? Then take my hand, oh real companion, and we'll dance. Oh, the sun poured down like silver. They can only break my heart. I drink the wine of lovers.
Usually takes me about two beers in before, you know, I start to get good at this podcasting thing, right?